From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, the Kremlin lashing out at the Biden administration, saying that President Biden calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal was unforgivable and unacceptable. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki appeared to walk back the president's comments yesterday.
The president's remarks speak for themselves. He was speaking from his heart and speaking from what he's seen on television, which is barbaric actions by a brutal dictator through his invasion of a foreign country.
Does the charge that Putin is a war criminal carry a responsibility? We'll talk with New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. We'll also get an update from war correspondent Chuck Holton, who has left Ukraine, crossing the border into Romania. And Deputy Secretary of Russia's Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, said the U.S. is stoking Russia-phobia. Interesting. Even our enemies are now playing identity politics. Medvedev said Russia might have to, quote, put their enemies in their place, end quote. We'll get the latest from Capitol Hill on how Congress is responding to yesterday's plea from Ukrainian President Zelensky for more help against the Russians. We'll also get an update on what's happening with Iran and the nuclear deal from Florida Congressman Greg Stube, a member of the House Armed Services Committee. And
Leader Boehner mentioned that tourists lined up in summer and winter. Long lines coming into the Capitol. In the summertime, because of the high humidity and how hot it gets here, you could literally smell the tourists coming into the Capitol.
That was the late Harry Reid, then Democratic Majority Leader of the U.S. Senate, back in 2008 at the dedication of the Capitol Visitor Center, which diverts Americans away from the actual Capitol. You know, the Democrats' aversion to the public continues as they drag their feet on reopening the Capitol complex to the American people, proposing a three-phased process that will go past Labor Day. Congressman Brian Stiles says it's time to open the Capitol now. He joins us later. And what can only be described as yet another warning of the path America is on, Kristen Wagner, a lead attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom, who has been on this program many times, had to have security escort her safely out of a free speech event at Yale when students began to riot because she was invited to speak. Some would say, well, what's new about that? I know, I've had security escort me off the campus of LSU, my alma mater. But there's something even more dangerous about what happened at Yale. Kristen joins us later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, it's all archived right there, along with lots of resources for you. Now, yesterday, for some reason, I got a little ahead of myself in our Bible reading plan. So today, our verse of the day, once again, comes from Numbers chapter 10. In fact, Numbers 10:35. So it was, whenever the ark set out, that Moses said, "Rise up, O Lord, let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you." All I can say to that is, rise up, O Lord. To find out more about how you can join our Bible reading plan, go to frc.org/Bible. Well, even as Ukrainian President Zelensky delivered a powerful address to Congress yesterday, Russian air campaigns continued to batter cities throughout the war-torn country, including an airstrike on a theater where hundreds had gathered for shelter. We're seeing in real time the brutality of war given technology. We're joined now for an update on the latest news by freelance war correspondent Chuck Holton. Chuck reported on much of this from Ukraine and has since crossed the border into Romania. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Now, you're in Romania, but what is the latest from Ukraine as you crossed over? What was the sense after President Zelensky addressed the U.S. Congress?
Well, it was an easy day crossing the border. It was only a three-hour wait out in the cold with no shelter, no bathroom. It's really torturous getting across. And they said, oh, if you had come yesterday or the day before, it was much, much longer. I don't know how they get away actually making people stand out in the cold that long with children and old people and that sort of thing. But
now, which side of the border is that on? Is that on the Romanian side of the border?
No, that's actually on the Ukrainian side. That was actually to get out of Ukraine to cross through what, you know, the border checkpoint on the Ukraine side took very, very long. They only had two people working and they had hundreds of people in line. And then actually getting across the Romanian part was very simple. It just waved you on through. And there were a lot, once you got through, there was a lot of help to be had from NGOs and Christian organizations that are there passing out food and warm hats and things like that.
So what's the delay coming out of Ukraine? Why the long lines getting out? I mean, I would think they would be wanting people to get to safety quickly.
I think any former Soviet country, red tape is kind of like the national sport. And so that was part of it. But they also have this kind of they're not allowing any men from age 18 to 60 to leave the country without a very good reason. So any men that were in line, had to go through a lot of checks and things like that. But also, they are letting women and children go first. And so if you're a man like me, you're sitting there letting the women go first, and then more people show up and they let the women go first, and then more people show up, and so on and so forth. So you just keep getting pushed further and further back in the line. And that's why it took me so long to get across.
So, Chuck, are you hearing anything positive on the negotiations for peace there between Russia and Ukraine?
Well, what we're seeing is this horrific amount of civilian deaths, basically terrorism that's being engaged in by Russia. And that actually is sort of good news in a way. I hate to say it that way, but what that means is that Russia feels like that's its only option at this point, because they are losing so badly on the battlefield. Whenever they engage Ukrainian forces, they are losing. And they've lost so many tanks and so many armored personnel carriers and so many helicopters that they really don't want to engage the Ukrainians. And they are out of a lot of things, fuel, ammunition, food. And so as they're running out of everything, the only thing they have left is these Smerch rockets that they just kind of launch at will. Then they have, rockets they launch from aircraft, and they're launching them on civilian targets because it's easier. But that shows that they are getting desperate and they're losing militarily. And so I think you're starting to see in the negotiations some wiggle room where they're starting to say, okay, well, maybe we're not going to give you ultimatums anymore, but maybe we'll actually talk about something to get this war stopped. And I think you will see that continue in the weeks to come.
As the Ukrainians continue to hold the line, which they seem to be doing quite well.
Right.
Yes. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk with you, and appreciate the reports you've provided to us over the last few weeks.
All right.
Well, as Chuck described, the Ukrainians holding is forcing the Republicans, forcing the Russians, rather, to come to the table of negotiations. Maybe peace is in the offering. We'll see. Joining us now, Congressman Greg Stube. He is a member of the House Armed Services Committee. Greg, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You heard Chuck's description of what's taking place on the ground there in Ukraine as he's crossed over into Romania. Ukrainians holding, the Russians becoming desperate. Do you think that we might be at a place, if the U.S. will step up its support for Ukraine, that we could see a negotiated peace?
Well, with the aid that was just approved last week by Congress, it was $14 billion, $3.5 billion of that was specifically for military aid, equipment, weapons. And then President Biden yesterday announcing anti-aircraft, anti-tank weapons and ammunition that's going to be sent. Hopefully that's going to allow the Ukrainians to further defend themselves. The president didn't take the step to go to transferring MiGs or aircraft to be able to defend themselves. But with the stalling of the reports that we're getting from all the different assets on the ground, it sounds like the Russians, if the Ukrainians get more of this weaponry and defensive weaponry, like the drones that are going to be sent, that'll help them tremendously defending against the attacks. And maybe at some point Putin will pull back, but I just can't see that. I think he's determined to try to overtake the country. So what I'm afraid is he's going to get desperate and then do something that no one in the world wants him to do.
That is the concern that many have, that he's not one who will back down and in desperation could escalate. That, I would think, would draw others into this battle beyond just the Ukrainian forces.
It would. And with the talk, you know, there's been a lot of bluffing and talk around the edges about tactical nukes and that type of weaponry. And if that is launched, I don't think that the Western world can sit back and watch a country get attacked by nuclear warfare. I think that would allow the NATO allies to come in and defend Ukraine. I think America would be put in a very tough position in order to defend the Ukrainian people and not allow one of our enemies to be able to use nuclear warfare in Europe.
Is that a message that needs to be delivered now to Putin from this administration and from NATO?
Well, it needs to be delivered now. And all of this should have been delivered, you know, weeks, months ago. I mean, this administration is so far behind the eight ball on what we should be doing. The moment the Russians were building up on the Ukrainian border, that's when the sanctions should have started. That's when they should have sanctioned the Russian government. That's when they should have sanctioned Russian oil and gas. They should have never repealed the sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which opened up billions of dollars of revenue to the Russian government. Zelensky himself has told other members of Congress that that revenue has helped fund the war against them. So there's so many things that could have been done to prevent where we're at now. And unfortunately, we are now in a circumstance where Russians engaging militarily in Ukraine, and now you don't have a lot of options. The sanctions came too late. The Russians are obviously going to be able to work through the Chinese to get some economic buffering, but those sanctions should have been put in place months ago to prevent this from happening to begin with.
Congressman Stupi, I want to shift gears for just a moment. Just got a couple minutes left. But while all the focus is on Ukraine and Russia, you have the issue of the Iranian nuclear deal, which is, as reports are saying, very close to reaching an agreement. Of course, Russia playing a role in that as well. What is the latest on the negotiations that you're hearing about?
Well, the latest is you have an administration who is negotiating with a country that chants death to America and death to Israel. And they're so desperate to get oil from another country because now they've decided because of pressure to not take Russian oil, where they're now they want to get it from Iran. They want to get it from Venezuela, our enemies, and going into a failed deal with the Iranians. That is the absolute worst case scenario for our country. There is no way that we should agree to any path to nuclear capabilities for the Iranian regime. Absolutely not. The Trump administration was smart and cared about the security and safety of Americans to get out of the JCPOA that was negotiated by the Obama administration, and to even think that we're going to negotiate with the Iranians and that deal's brokered by the Russians. And then if that deal goes through, the Russians would be able to use that deal with the Iranians to subvert the Western sanctions that are currently in place. So the Russians know that if that deal goes through, they'll just use that deal with the Iranians to subvert all the Western sanctions that have been placed on them.
We seem to be negotiating from a position of weakness rather than strength. When I say we, the United States, this is a pathway for Iran to have a nuclear weapon through this deal.
Yeah, it's a path to a nuclear weapon. It's a path to open up financial resources to them. There's also talk today about them removing the terrorist sanctions for one of their terrorist regimes. What that does is opens up billions of dollars of revenue to that terrorist regime so that they can commit terror all across the world. I mean, haven't we learned our lesson?
Greg, we got to leave it there. Thanks so much. We're out of time. Thanks for joining us. Stick with us, folks. We're back after this.
Are you struggling to spend consistent time in God's Word? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. FRC's two-year Bible reading plan helps you to approach daily Bible reading with an intentional focus of diving deeper into the nature of God and how His Word speaks into cultural issues. By studying the Bible, we can see the grandeur of God unfold throughout the past. The Stand on the Word reading plan takes you through daily scripture in an engaging manner to help you stay grounded in God's truth. All wisdom comes from God, and He has given us the Bible as a way to understand the world. Start this adventure today with Family Research Council. When you sign up, we'll text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help prepare you for conversations with your friends and family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible. With the current division and confusion of our culture, It is so important for Christians to root ourselves in the truth of God's word so that we are prepared to give a reason for the hope that we have. For this purpose, Family Research Council launched the Center for Biblical Worldview. The center applies the Bible and the historical teachings of the church to current issues. This helps Christians understand and live by a biblical worldview, know why Scripture must be authoritative, and equips believers to advance and defend the faith in workplaces, schools, communities, and the public square. The experts at the center address and provide resources on issues like religious liberty, abortion, voting, marriage, and sexuality. To access free resources like the Biblical Worldview series, go to frc.org/worldview. To get highlights of the latest work of the Worldview Fellows, including blogs, interviews, and publications, sign up at frc.org/subscriptions.
At Family Research Council, it is important to us that we stay connected with you and that you stay informed. With the increase in tech censorship of conservatives and Christians, we've decided to be proactive to make sure we don't go completely dark due to censorship. That is why we've created a tech subscription platform. If we get canceled, you can stay informed and still find updates on faith, family, and freedom. How? Just text STAND to 67742 to sign up for our text alerts, and you will get FRC's content straight to your phone. Again, just text STAND to 67742, and you will get special alerts on the biggest stories of the day. You can stay informed with just a simple text. We want you to be able to stay connected with like-minded community and to always have access to our content. Stay connected and informed. Just text STAND to 67742.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. Correction, earlier in our last segment, I said Greg Stube was a member of the House Armed Services Committee. He's actually on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. President Biden took a what I would call a major rhetorical step yesterday when he confirmed that he considers Russian President Vladimir Putin a war criminal. This signifies the harshest criticism from any administration official to date. But more than a week ago, Congress held its first hearing to hold Putin accountable, pressing for the prosecution of Putin for war crimes. Here to discuss this is Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. He is the ranking member of the Congressional Executive Commission on China, co-chair of the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission, senior member on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, and also the ranking member on the Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, and Global Human Rights and International Organizations. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Tony, thank you so very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I want to play this clip very quickly of the president yesterday being asked this question about whether or not Vladimir Putin was or is a war criminal. Play clip number one, please.
Mr. President, after everything we've seen, are you ready to call Putin a war criminal?
No.
All right. A lot of noise back there. This was at a White House event. He was asked by a Fox reporter, Mr. President, after everything you've seen, are you ready to call Putin a war criminal? Biden said no. But then 30 seconds later, did you ask me whether I would call? And the reporter said a war criminal. He said, oh, I do think he is a war criminal. Now, let me ask you, Congressman Smith, that declaration by the president. That's words, but words require actions. What would be the next step?
Well, the next step would be for the State Department, which is already suggesting it needs to further investigate. I mean, who launched this blitzkrieg into Ukraine that is analogous to the Nazis going into Poland in 1939? It was Putin. And we have seen every day that civilians are being targeted, schools, hospitals. And that is absolutely a violation of Geneva Conventions. It's also, it is de jure a war crime. And the person doing it is Vladimir Putin. I believe, and this is what our hearing was focused on, that he needed to be designated as a war crime. A tribunal, international tribunal, needs to be set up immediately, no delay, like we've done in the past, and so designate him. It could be done almost overnight. And then to the record, his other atrocities could be added going forward. But the evidence is overwhelming. And Tony, you know this because you were very much involved with this. When ISIS was slaughtering Christians, and many of them made their way into Erbil, and I went there and visited with those individuals, the State Department couldn't call that a genocide. It took a resolution by Jeff Fortenberry to put the Congress on record calling it a genocide. And it was a genocide. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And now, you know, delay is denial when you're talking about these designations, because I do believe if he's so designated a war criminal and the tribunal is set up immediately, it will have some chilling effect on other people's complicity in these horrific crimes.
The one thing that's unique about this, Congressman Smith, is that technology. You know, we saw what happened in Erbil and or in the Middle East in that region. But technology is such that we're very connected with what's happening with Ukraine, where we're seeing in real time not just news footage, but very graphic clips being sent from individuals and being posted on social media accounts. And so the evidence, as you said, is right there. Times past, we had to wait to collect the evidence after the conflict was over and we had to sort through the rubble. We have it right now. So the next step would be for the State Department to go to the United Nations and call for action, would it not?
Absolutely. And I have a resolution that calls for that. We do want the president to take the lead. If not, some other foreign head of state should take the lead, but it ought to be the United States of America. We ought to be out front. You know, it's important that we give Zelensky the kind of defensive aid capability that he desires. Why wasn't it given a year ago now, as those troops were being to amass and get deployed on the border under the pretext of war games with Lukashenko in Belarus? But that said, this could be part of a holding to account, and hopefully, you know, the people around Putin, including the Russian people, if the world coalesces around your president is a war criminal, they might be less inclined to follow. And that goes for the soldiers as well. And you know, Tony, we've seen those clips of those young conscripts, those young Russian soldiers, who didn't have a clue that this is what they're going to be called upon to do. So I think we need to spread that kind of accountability throughout the entire ranks. And look at all the people protesting in Moscow and elsewhere. And of course, they're being batted down and hit and hurt by the Russian secret police. But that said, those numbers will grow if an indictment is handed down immediately. And let me also say, it ought to be done, if we can't do it in the Security Council, which is unlikely because of the veto power that both China and Russia has, well, then let's do it in the General Assembly. And that's where a resolution could be offered and a tribunal established.
Very quickly, Congressman Smith, before we're out of time, what can our listeners and viewers do?
Well, I think call your congressman, call, pray. And I think prayer more than anything else is needed during these atrocities, which absolutely breaks your heart. When President Zelensky gave his address virtually to a joint session of Congress, and I was there like I think every other member, he showed a video clip that was just, you know, not unlike what we see every night. But when you see all of those people, call your congressman, call the White House. I think the number, if I'm not mistaken, is 456-1414. Call them and say, tribunal, indict them. Why wait? We waited with Milosevic. We waited with Charles Taylor in Rwanda, and he was president of Liberia. I was pushing for the one for Yugoslavia for months and then years. It was very slow. But now, as you pointed out so well, this is in real time. We see it all.
Right.
You can always add to the indictment.
Congressman Chris Smith, we're out of time, but always great to talk with you. Thanks for your leadership on Capitol Hill.
Tony, thank you so very much. And thank you for your leadership both on Capitol Hill and throughout this country. It's incredible. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Stick with us, folks. We're coming back with more after this.
Yeah.
What is religious liberty and why should you care about it? Simply put, religious liberty is the freedom to choose your religious beliefs and to live according to those beliefs. Why should we care about this freedom? At Family Research Council, we care about religious freedom because we believe that it is an inherent human right that all governments have an obligation to protect. Tragically, not all governments do. Religious persecution is a tragic reality around the world that is not often acknowledged by the media, even though attacks on people of all faiths continue to increase globally. In Scripture, God calls Christians to pray and care for the persecuted church, the downtrodden, and those who cannot help themselves. Therefore, we must be advocates for those persecuted for their faith. To access Family Research Council's latest resources and to learn more about religious freedom and what you can do to help the persecuted, go to frc.org/religious liberty.
Do you want to be able to stay up to date on conservative news? Are you looking for Christian resources to help you stay politically engaged? Then download Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. With all of our content available at your fingertips, you will conveniently be able to stay up to date throughout your busy day. The Stand Firm app will give you access to a variety of resources, such as our most recent episodes of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, tweets and other social media posts, and our latest blogs, updates, and publications. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on the issues that most concern you. Visit the App Store on your smartphone or mobile device and search Stand Firm to download Family Research Council's official Stand Firm app.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. Well, 2 years after the Capitol building was closed to the public in response to COVID, plans are finally underway for a reopening. But it is a three-phased opening, with business as usual not returning until after Labor Day. Now, museums, stadiums, theaters, businesses, and workplaces are open across the country. But the U.S. Capitol can't fully reopen until September. Citizens' right to petition Congress is directly enshrined in the Constitution, making it long past time for the People's House to fully open, allowing the American people access to their government. Joining me now as a leader in this effort to reopen the Capitol, Congressman Brian Stile. He is a member of the Committee on House Administration and House Financial Services Committee and represents Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. You have been very clear that this proposed three-phase opening is not good enough. Tell us why.
It's woefully inadequate for a couple reasons. One, it doesn't fully reopen the United States Capitol in the House of Representatives until Labor Day. We need to rip the Band-Aid off these COVID-era policies immediately and get our way of life back. Two, we still have a process here in the House of Representatives where individuals have to be invited to come and speak to their member of Congress. You'd almost think the Democrats were nervous about having constituents come here to the Hill to talk about higher costs, to talk about failed energy policies, to talk about the fact that the Democrats won't secure the border, and the list goes on. And third, we have individuals coming to the United States Capitol from school groups all across the country this spring. And instead of allowing tours of the United States Capitol, the bastion of democracy, what we're seeing is Nancy Pelosi dramatically limiting tours to all these school groups coming in. It just makes your heart sink for these students.
Yeah, this is something that is a once in a lifetime for many of these kids to be able to come to Congress, see how our government is supposed to work. Now, Congressman, some of your colleagues have used the excuse that, well, security is an issue. We still have January 6th to deal with. In fact, Congressman Gerald Conley of Virginia said this. This was last year. When discussing the opening of the Capitol, he said, for some lawmakers, just seeing members of the public back in the Capitol building could bring back memories of that violent day. You know, I don't mean to be offensive, but you know what? I think it's time for them to put on their big boy pants and either go to work and allow the American people to have access to their government or get another job, quite frankly.
Yeah, we just have to rip the Band-Aid off of all of these COVID-era policies, off of all the January 6th excuses as it relates to allowing members of the public access to the United States Capitol and access to come and share their grievances with their members of Congress. It's no doubt that we're seeing a lot of excuses from the left. Originally, it was COVID. That was the original reason the United States Capitol and the House office building closed over 2 years ago. The tune has shifted, and now it's a little more January 6th than it is COVID. But again, it's excuse after excuse rather than reopening the Capitol. We have the tools in the toolkit to make sure that members of the public and members of Congress are safe and secure. And we can do that by reopening the House office buildings and allowing individuals to come in, share their grievances with their members of Congress, and obtain a tour of the Capitol. It's beyond frustrating that Nancy Pelosi continues to keep the United States Capitol and the House closed.
Are you seeing any movement from the other side of the aisle among Democrats to say, yeah, it is time to reopen?
Maybe a little tiny bit, but they don't want it to reopen. They don't want to allow us to get our way of life back. They don't want to return to normal. They want to create a new normal going forward. That's what's so darn frustrating. House office buildings used to be fully open to the public. You'd be able to come in, walk through basic airport style security, come in and meet with your member of Congress. Now you're not allowed in the building without an invitation. So any member that doesn't want to meet with a constituent that's upset has the ability to keep them outside the building. That's absurd. We need to be working in the opposite direction to allow members of the public to come in and share their frustrations with all the crazy policies that are going on in Washington, D.C. right now.
Right. And even for those of us who are in D.C. working, even to get to the Capitol is such a hassle. And so most of the time it's not worth the hassle because it takes so much time to clear all the hurdles to get in for meetings on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, absolutely. And what Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats are doing is making it more difficult for people to come in. It's always been a challenge. I understand that. But they're adding to the burden. They're adding in requirements. They're tracking who comes into the United States, House Representatives' office buildings. It is just kind of disgraceful what they've done and their work to continue to prevent us from just getting our way of life back up here on Capitol Hill and across the country.
Well, Congressman Stahl, I appreciate you joining us today, and I appreciate you pushing for the Capitol to be reopened to the American people.
Thank you very much.
All right. And, you know, I'm quite frankly, I'm tired of hearing this January 6th thing. Again, and I'll just restate it. If they can't if they can't deal with reality and go to work, then they need to find another job. And look, we had a shooting at FRC 10 years ago by a Southern Poverty Law Center inspired, incited LGBTQ activist. And guess what? We were back at work the next day. I have no sympathy for those who want to be shielded from the American public. That's what it's all about. Because they cannot tolerate being challenged for their destructive policies that they're pushing on America. Okay, I got that off my chest. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Kristen Wagner, lead attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom. She was on Yale University campus for a free speech event. But the students, they can't tolerate free speech. What does that say about the future of the legal system in America? We talk about it next here on Washington Watch.
Do you want to be able to stay up to date on conservative news? Are you looking for Christian resources to help you stay politically engaged? Then download Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. With all of our content available at your fingertips, you will conveniently be able to stay up to date throughout your busy day. The Stand Firm app will give you access to a variety of resources, such as our most recent episodes of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, tweets and other social media posts, and our latest blogs, updates, and publications. Additionally, you will have the opportunity to take action and make your voice heard by contacting your elected officials on the issues that most concern you. Visit the App Store on your smartphone or mobile device and search Stand Firm to download Family Research Council's official Stand Firm app.
What is religious liberty and why should you care about it? Simply put, religious liberty is the freedom to choose your religious beliefs and to live according to those beliefs. Why should we care about this freedom? At Family Research Council, we care about religious freedom because we believe that it is an inherent human right that all governments have an obligation to protect. Tragically, not all governments do. Religious persecution is a tragic reality around the world that is not often acknowledged by the media, even though attacks on people of all faiths continue to increase globally. In Scripture, God calls Christians to pray and care for the persecuted church, the downtrodden, and those who cannot help themselves. Therefore, we must be advocates for those persecuted for their faith. To access Family Research Council's latest resources and to learn more about religious freedom and what you can do to help the persecuted, go to frc.org/religious liberty.
Attention university students. Are you looking for an internship that will help you grow as a Christian leader and allow you to positively influence the culture? Then Family Research Council's internship program is for you. FRC's life-changing 12 to 15-week internship program will prepare and equip you for the next step in your professional journey. You'll enjoy a speaker series focusing on careers and callings, lectures from prominent conservative leaders, and weekly biblical worldview training. All of these offerings were created to aid you in your personal and professional development. As an intern, you will have the opportunity to work side by side with our experts in policy, communications, event planning, and more. The real-world experience you gain will prepare you to pursue a career of influence and make a difference wherever God calls you. This paid internship offers fully funded housing in the heart of downtown DC, giving you the chance to experience our nation's capital. Visit frc.org/internships to apply.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, this probably does not come as a surprise, but mob rule took over one of our nation's elite institutions. Yale Law students attempted to shout down a diverse panel on civil liberties. The event turned so chaotic that police were eventually called in to escort panelists from the building. The event featured a progressive atheist speaking along with Kristen Wagner of the Alliance Defending Freedom. They both found common ground over a 2021 Supreme Court case involving legal remedies for First Amendment violations, demonstrating that a liberal atheist and a conservative Christian both support free speech. But more than 100 Ivy League law students apparently find free speech too unpalatable to tolerate. With me now is Alliance Defending Freedom's General Counsel, Kristen Wagner, who joins us to discuss her experience in New Haven last week. Kristen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. It's nice to be here.
So tell us about the event at Yale. This was a free speech event in which you and a progressive atheist, who obviously has a different worldview but agrees that our First Amendment is important, found that there's not too many at Yale that find the First Amendment acceptable.
Well, you're absolutely right. It was deeply disappointing to have essentially two female litigators, both who have argued at the Supreme Court, representing ADF as well as the American Humanist Association, want to speak to the students about where we found common ground. And the Supreme Court decision we were there to talk about was an 8-1 decision. And nonetheless, the students didn't want to hear about that decision. They would rather hurl insults and physical threats. And it got to the point where it was so volatile that we couldn't even exit the building without security.
Yeah, I watched the video of, we played a little B-roll of that, but I watched the video as they were shouting, and as the professor, who I guess was the host of this free speech setting, and I don't want to miss the irony here, free speech setting, that the students, they all had signs, so juvenile, had signs, but they were hurling, profanity. They were speaking profanities. They were making threats. They had the certain appendages of their hand extended forward. So it's fascinating to me that they can't even tolerate a conversation between two people who have very different perspectives but agree that the First Amendment is fundamental. What does that tell us about the future of American law?
I think that's what was the most concerning to me leaving that room, was that they were not able to engage in any kind of critical thinking, in any intellectual curiosity. There was such a lack of humility and just basic civility to be able to engage with viewpoints they disagreed with. And again, that wasn't even the topic. There was nothing controversial about the topic we were speaking about. I will also say, Tony, that I was disappointed that's the only video that was captured, because that was probably the tamest part of the event, was when they were addressing their own professor, which was extremely disrespectful in the way that they spoke to her and the hand gestures towards her. But that was nothing compared to the next hour that we were in that room.
Now, Kristen, were you ever able to speak? Were you able to ever engage in the conversation?
Yes, and to some extent. At some point, the protesters all in unison, there were about, I've been told, about 150 people in the room, about 120 of them were protesters. They all stood up at one point at one time after snapping their fingers and doing these precocious juvenile gestures, came down to the front next to me, and Monica from the Humanist Association walked right by us, slapped some signs down, called us some names, walked out of the room. But then for the next 45 minutes or so, they began to pound on the walls outside of the exits of the room and to scream and chant and those kinds of things. In those moments, we were able to get some words in. But then they came back in a few minutes later again to start their jeering and their hurling of insults.
You know, the response is, as you said, lack of civility. I mean, what makes our country work is that we have, you know, we're a melting pot. We have different backgrounds, different ideas, but we have a common ethic, if you will, the American ethic, which is out of many, the one. And you can't do that if you can't have conversations. And that's what's been very troubling as I've watched. I mean, I've been escorted off of campuses, even my alma mater of LSU, because of this intolerance toward differing viewpoints. But if we can't have a conversation, we can't debate these big issues of our day, we will become a more divided nation.
I'm not sure if it's possible to be even more divided in the sense that those, you know, the Yale Law School is supposed to be training up our future leaders, future not only litigators, but Supreme Court justices, legislators, leaders, corporate executives, and their inability to tolerate any opinion but their own demonstrates to us that we're really starting to head towards this sort of tyranny, I think, where the mob thinks that they will rule and crush any opposing viewpoints. And I think for me, this experience, it didn't frighten me. It just deepened my commitment to show up early and often and to do so without anger, to be kind and to civil and to model that to them, but not to back down from the truth and the importance of what's at stake here.
Well, that's one thing I like about you, Kristen. You've never done that. You've always shown courage under control, and we're grateful for that. But let me ask you, did you ever feel physically in danger during this event?
I'm going to share a story real quick with you, Tony, that I probably wouldn't share in other forums. But every once in a while, I can count on about one hand when I get really nervous before something. And my legs were shaking in those moments, to be honest. But I also want to share this moment with you, which was when a note was passed up to me that was typed, and it was a scripture verse. I get a little emotional even thinking about it, because it was just the intensity and the volatility in that room. And there was a student who had known in advance that there was going to be a problem potentially. He thought through it, and he sent me an encouraging word from the scripture and said, keep the faith and good luck. And it just emboldened me in the sense that I thought, he's not able to speak his mind in this moment, but I can. And to know that, you know, God goes before us, and the truth helps human flourishing. So we're on the right side of this, and we need to engage by loving our neighbor, which means speaking the truth in kindness.
Wow, powerful story. God has his people, everyone. It reminds me of the story of Martin Niemöller, who was being escorted to court, and the Nazi guard that was escorting him simply whispered into his ears, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. God has his people everywhere. And Kristen, always grateful to have you on the program, but thankful for your compassionate, but courageous in your committed stand for truth. And of course, the partnership with ADF, always appreciated. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Kristen Wagner with Alliance Defending Freedom. This is an Ivy League law school. Many of our Supreme Court judges, justices, our appellate court judges, many of our district court judges. I mean, some of the top legal minds of America come from this institution. And this tells you the track that we're on. Joining me now to talk more about this is one of our own attorneys. He is the Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. And that is Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
You know, as Kristen was describing what took place, and I've read news accounts that verify everything that she said, that they were out there beating, stomping their feet, you know, making all these noises. It sounds very, frankly, demonic, and it is very similar to what happened at the confirmation of Justice Kavanaugh, when the left was throwing a fit at the door of the Supreme Court, literally scratching and kicking at the door of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, it really seems here, you know, like we have a breakdown in reason and order, as we examine kind of the underlying behavior here, whether this instance or the Kavanaugh hearings. I think, you know, just reflecting on this, Tony, I think many of us are familiar with the issues in the educational system, in higher ed, in universities and on campuses. But I think what's really alarming here and sadly ironic is the legal system, law schools, of which Yale is viewed as the top U.S. law school, or one, or the most difficult one to get into. The legal education system is supposed to be promoting debate, promoting an exchange of ideas, the whole framework of law school. And I went through 4 years of law school, an additional master's in law to my JD degree. But the whole point is to train students on how to understand the arguments of different sides. If students are promoting or arguing one side, the professor's job is to say, what is the other side's argument? Even if you don't disagree, if you don't agree with it, your job is to understand the argument and to be able to articulate it. That's the very opposite of what was going on here. And aside from the ridiculous behavior and alarming behavior, we're not even creating a functional legal education system. Now, some might say that's happened, you know, that's done and gone long ago, but I would say, you know, observing this is particularly alarming and really moves us towards a dangerous view of what how we view a civic leadership, of which the legal profession is a part, and Yale Law School in particular, dangerous view of what that would mean for our country. Really, I think, dark and foreboding. I think this calls us to pray and to be aware and engage, but it's very dangerous as we look at what happened here and the implications for us in the years ahead.
Well, as Kristen was describing, this was a conversation, not really a debate, more of a conversation with a progressive atheist from the Humanist Association, one of those associations that had a different worldview, but a similar perspective on the First Amendment, that it's important. And this is something I've made reference to many times on the program. There's a difference between liberals who, you know, have a different worldview, but they understand that our process requires that we preserve certain rights and we have debate, discussion, and reach consensus. The left is different. Left and liberal are not the same. What this display that we saw at Yale really harkens back to the French Revolution, where there is no deviation from what is said to be what is demanded. And those who are, you know, they refuse to get in line are silenced.
Yeah, you really see that happening here. You know, and if those who study history will observe when the communists came into power in the Soviet Union, the early part of this century, the past century, when the Nazis took over, you reference the French Revolution. You can look at communism spreading to Cuba and elsewhere. There's a takeover of the leadership pillars of society, including the legal profession. And lawyers in those regimes are trained to implement a totally different approach, and it perverts justice. You know, you study the show trials in the Soviet Union. It was about a political outcome, and justice and the law were manipulated to get there. we are, if you examine what's happening here with the refusal to consider other views, the desired outcome, and the militancy with which it's being enforced, you see hints of that. There are shades and hints of similarity between what has happened in those regimes, which many would agree are despotic, yet America is moving in that direction. Certainly this instance where we're examining intolerance and what should be the enlightened leaders of our society. This is really sad, and Yale Law School should be, I mean, this should be a shame for this kind of thing occurring there.
Now, I will say the undercurrent with this and so many other things is the whole LGBTQ transgender agenda, which was very much a part of the messaging there at Yale. So we've diagnosed the problem, Travis Weber. I think everybody, you know, sees what is happening in terms of the desire to silence opposing voices, those who oppose the left. So what's the solution? Let's focus just on when we look at our legal system and this being a major pipeline of judges and lawyers and so on and so forth. What do we do? Because this certainly is not the path we want to go down as a nation if we want to survive.
Yeah, I think there are several things. One is just for all of us as Americans to model what proper behavior is. The civil and firm with, you know, participation in debate with convictions where we stand up for our views with respect and we don't back down, but we are engaging with those who disagree. As we model that, whether in or out of law school, that's gonna prayerfully and hopefully spread throughout society. I think secondly, to the specific situation here, Tony, I think those engaging the legal profession, whether students going to law school, those who are involved in supporting or working with law schools in various ways, need to recognize the reality of what's going on here. And if this kind of thing is not corrected, realize that Yale or whoever is supporting, whatever entity is supporting this kind of behavior from their students is not serving the legal profession, and other institutions need to be looked to as those who will educate our future lawyers. I mean, this is really the way practically ahead for the legal profession. And obviously there are implications for that in the broader educational system. And how we are, you know, if students are learning these things in younger levels of education, high school or elementary school, then the issue needs to be dealt with there. And I know we do a lot of that, but families need to look at that and take guard to make sure their children are not raised up in that mindset.
Yeah, I think what we saw there at Yale, or what we're seeing there at Yale, is the manifestation of years of preparation. And that's what's happening in the indoctrination. However, I do think that, you know, the Senate in particular, the Senate Judiciary Committee, where judges are confirmed, should send a very strong message that this is not this is intolerable. And for those that would be coming from these institutions, they're going to get a second look before they would be confirmed to these posts. So I think there needs to be some self-policing on behalf of these institutions that are training up lawyers. Travis, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you.
And folks, I want to encourage you to do your part, to be bold, to be courageous, to speak out and not shrink back in the face of the intolerance of the left. Do what the Apostle Paul says. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, when you've taken your stand, by all means, standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.